This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Hour and a half away from Pete Carroll, who will join us, of course, at 9:30 to chat about what went down yesterday. Down in Los Angeles, it was a strange game. I mean, it was really fun to watch, honestly. If these two teams played each other 16 times, the Rams might win 10 or 11 of them, but man, would they all be entertaining.
Yes.
The Rams are a better team. That's a really good football team, better than I thought they would be. I honestly believed that there was a little too much hype being directed at the Rams, and that sometimes it takes a little time for all that to come together. And so far, I've been wrong. They've been really, really good. I don't know if they're as good as the Saints. I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl this year. But that is awfully good football team. But man, the Seahawks hang with them.
They do.
They give them fits the way most teams won't. They're willing to go toe to toe. They're willing to hit them. They're willing to drive the ball right at them and take the fight to them.
Yep.
Instead of sitting back on their heels. But unfortunately, for the second time, they fall just short late. And that leads us to a slate of takeaways.
Got like a deep touchdown, Seahawks.
It's Brock and Salk's takeaways.
Got a man out there. It is intercepted. Shaq Griffin picks it off,
and it starts.
No. You know, I think I said to you last week, I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday when I was back in Denver doing the show, I said, man, Jared Goff is become a likable guy. He's a star in L.A. He's super humble. He's never really in the headlines until yesterday when he mentioned Halle Berry. But he's really just not been a guy that, especially in that scene, with all of the glitz and the glamour in the L.A., guys usually try to capitalize on that and take advantage of it. And he's, I think, been very defiant in doing so and just a humble guy and been about everybody else. And after, again, watching him, now I know why. Because he just basically gets to play 7-on-7. I mean, he gets hit. Did his jersey get dirty at all? Did he take just a massive shot? He threw the ball away a few times. He had to scramble. But by and large, like the first two series of the game, he got hugged once. I mean, that was it. It was in the amount of space in the pocket for him. I think that's what just jumps out so much. And it's not just against the Seahawks. They're doing it against everybody. And when they run their scheme with their jet sweeps and their outside zone, and they really neuter a lot of the rush, and they have eyes of the defenders that have to be on all of their assignments, playing their man and their matchup football in their front, I get it. I get why the pass rush can't just tee off. But he then drops 8, 9, 10 yards back, and there is nobody around him. Nobody. I mean, his pocket looks different than any other quarterback in this league, period. Even Drew Brees has got to be in the pocket and step up and do more things. I mean, Goff's game is, man, that's fun. And there's a lot of
cute. Tupac! Dusty! Tupac! Yes. Obama! Obama! Obama!
You could throw Halle Berry in there now. If you didn't hear this yesterday, so there's sound of him making a play call of Halle Berry. It got to her, and she said, "What's the deal with this, Jared Goff?" He said, "It's my favorite play. Shoot your shot, kid.
Well played.
Got to shoot your shot if you want a chance."
Best part of that was also seeing Todd Gurley's comments afterwards.
Oh, what'd he say?
Oh, it's just like the emoji where a person is covering their eyes and going, "Oh God." It's amazing.
You know, it kind of reminds me of a little bit too. And I hadn't thought about it the three or four other times we've watched them. Do you remember when Mike Martz and that whole Fast show on turf got going? It looked a little bit like this. Now, it didn't have necessarily some of the jet sweep, but as far as like the zone, the stretch, and then just the in cuts, you're just running in cut after in cut after in cut, or over or corner. And whether it was Mark Bolger, whether it was Kurt Warner, all the way to a Super Bowl, I mean, those guys fit into that system in that way. And Jared Goff certainly does as well.
There's one huge difference. The Greatest Show on Turf and Mike Martz let the quarterback get destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, its undoing was that the quarterback kept getting pounded.
Correct.
This quarterback doesn't get hit.
No.
And some of that was the Seahawks yesterday. I think I saw Frank Clark. Was Frank Clark playing? He played, right?
Bro, he got half a sack.
Of course. Well, he had his two plays where he geared up for them. But was Frank Clark playing the rest of the game? Was Deion Jordan playing in that game? Did they come anywhere near the quarterback? I didn't see any of it.
Hey, Ric Flair! Ric Flair! Ric Flair!
Takeaways.
Brock, there he was. The Rashad Penny we've been waiting for. He looked good.
He did.
Looked like a good running back. Maybe not a great one yet, but he definitely looked like a good one, man. You saw him break out, cut 20 right off the bat. There goes Rashad Penny.
Ed Dixon in the game, a tight end. The handoff to Penny. He finds some running room. 10, 5, yes. Touchdown! Seahawks. Penny starts up inside, bounces it right, and nothing but green grass to the end zone.
You like 18- that little- Sorry, Rabes. Do you like that little cut?
A little shove cut?
That little cut right? Oh, yeah. I'll just cut it back against the grain like I used to do playing Tecmo Bowl with Walter Payton. Just cut it right back against the grain, went for the TD there. How about the play right before it? This one, cut 21, might have been even more impressive.
Ed Dixon in the game, a tight end. The handoff to Penny. He finds some running room. 10, 5, yes. Touchdown.
Oh, that sounded like the same one.
Ed Dixon in the game, a tight end.
What's going on there?
Same one.
Oh, that's my fault.
Just like Tech Mobile.
I put the wrong cut on there twice.
Come on, Howdy.
And labeled it two different names.
Really?
Yeah, I labeled it two different things, and I put the wrong one in there so that it actually plays the same thing both times.
Nice job,
Penny,
buddy.
As the tailback on first and 10, and he gets the handoff, makes one man miss, brace across the line of scrimmage. He's across the 35, 40, down the far sideline, 35, 30, finally wrestled out of bounds inside the 30-yard line. Hello, Mr. Penny, where have you been?
Hello.
Hello. Anyway.
I was asked not to do that anymore.
Dude look good.
I was asked not to do any hellos anymore.
No? Yeah. No, that's too bad. Well, dude look good. Penny looked like a real NFL running back. Now, he's a glider. He really is. And when you see him out in space, he churns out yards. Like, all of a sudden, he just gobbles them up, and you don't realize he's moving as quickly as he is, which is, I think, Brock, why he doesn't look good on the plays where he doesn't look good.
Yeah, I think it was last Monday. I said, where is Fofo 8? This guy ran Fofo 8.
You see it when he actually gets space.
Yes.
But he doesn't have that 4-4-8 in when there's nothing there. I don't see him picking up the
carrying
the
people?
Yeah, the yard or two on a dead play that Mike Davis was getting them that obviously we've seen from Carson that Marshawn was so great at. Like, oh, this play could be a negative two, and instead I'm turning it into positive four. I don't know that you're seeing that out of Penny.
I would agree. But
that doesn't mean it won't be there eventually.
I'll tell you what you did not see was some of the tentative nature.
No, he went.
No, he did go, and I really hope that is a game that a young guy needs that can just propel him. And coach, or cut number four, you know, just talking about that, Rashad, talking about getting going in this league.
You know, I can do it. That's all I tell myself. Like, man, you can do it. You know, these guys are faster, but you can do it. You can just play with them. And that's something I told myself the whole game, just thinking in my head, like, you can do this. You can do this. You know, they trust you.
This didn't come out of nowhere either. Pete Carroll is obviously, this is important to him to get Rashad Penny going. And if you listen to Cut 11, it sounds like there's definitely been some conversation.
He looked great today. He looked great. He looked just like the guy we thought he would look like when we drafted him. I go back all the way back before he got hurt and he had to miss the month with his broken finger. That's what he looked like. And today he just busted out. We've been on him hard. We've been challenging him to get right and to work at the right tempo and all the way to find what it's like to be a pro. We're just teaching him. He's just a young guy figuring it out. I thought today he needed it so badly because he knows he's a great player.
All that being said, where'd he go in the second quarter? So he has all the success. He runs for those two big runs, scores a touchdown, and then you don't see him again until the third quarter outside of one rush in the two-minute drill?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, a couple third downs. You don't convert. You don't get those opportunities.
Yes, but you went with C.J. Prosise on the next drive? The guy who's been inactive all year?
You had to get CJ a touchdown.
No, you really didn't.
Sure you did.
No, you really didn't.
It worked out. Listen
to it. No, it really didn't.
It was a good play.
Made no sense. The 115-33-yard advantage in the second quarter for the Rams, I don't understand where Penny went. Maybe he got more confusion on the sideline. They thought he was beat up or something. I don't know.
Takeaways.
Oh.
The lack of creativity in the dropback game is troubling. Run game, check, check, check. Play action pass, woo, check, check, check. Even game management, kept all three timeouts, check. Drop back passing game, work in progress, to put it nicely. There's just got to be more. And many of those third downs, and that's where, you know, those third downs, you've just got to find those completions. That's the one thing in the second half of 2015 that everybody will point to and say, well, Russell can't do this. Russell's not. Yes, he is. Go put that tape on in the second half of 2015, and you will see a guy that has nails in the pocket, that they had so many just good answers, you know, so many, you know, creative rub routes, so many opportunities to get the ball out of his hand in rhythm. And, man, the drop back game yesterday, especially on third down, was bad. There weren't guys open. You know, this wasn't a game where in the first 2 weeks of the season I said to you, Mike, gosh, you got that quick out, or maybe you had that little angle route. There were opportunities to get the ball out. 2, 3, 4 of these third downs, there was nobody. Nobody that came open, either through spacing, either through rub routes, either through any of their concepts. That is an area that's got to get cleaned up in the final 7 weeks.
And quite frankly, this is one of mine in here. I think that drop back game is what led to the fumble. Like, I understand the fumble's a killer, the sack, fumble, turnover, and then on the next play. By the way, clear holding. On the fly sweep?
Yes.
What is that? You can see the guy's hands dragging around the end as he's trying to get to the corner. I never want to start yelling, hey, that's a hold, but that was a hold. Whatever. Yep. I mean, you can't give up the ball on the 10-yard line like that. Third and long dropback game had not worked all game. So I understand that Russell can't fumble it there, but it just didn't seem like a very good play call. You're exposing him to getting hit once again. And where's the creativity? Where are the interesting plays that have to complement everything you've done with the running game the whole time?
You know, I forget which game it was a couple weeks ago where they were committed to even running on third and mediums.
Yeah.
I like that. This team is built more, especially...
But that was third and long.
It was. But if you're going to get third and five over the course of a game, you know, or third and six,
yeah.
You go ahead and run draw. Go ahead and run zone read, maybe with a little pass option as a third outlet. There's got to be a little bit more in their third down passing game.
Does Schottenheimer not have that? Does he not have the next gear of creativity to add to this offense?
Yeah.
Or does he not think that this team can handle it yet? Like, what am I missing here?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good question for the coach.
Okay. All right. Question. Let's move this along then. We got to get to him.
Takeaways.
We got to get to Pete. If we get through more of these quicker, Brock, eventually we'll get to Pete, right? Hey, I'm good with the onside kick.
Me too.
I know a lot of people are complaining about it, and the execution of it was awful. I don't know that we have the Pete Carroll sound on this. I apologize for not looking. But the onside kick idea made sense. You needed a turnover. You had to have a turnover in order to win this game.
You weren't stopping them.
You were not stopping them. You had to have a turnover. And essentially, that would have been the equivalent of a turnover, right?
Well, let me tell you this. If it looked like that during the week, we never would have called it. It looked great all week long. We never missed it one time. That was not the ball we were supposed to hit. Too bad for Seabass. He's a great pro and all that, but the ball didn't come off the way it's supposed to come off. we thought we had a great chance to surprise him, take advantage, take the field goal, and then try to get the ball.
Why are coaches so much more willing to torch kickers than anybody else?
I don't know,
else?
But I hope this is the Pete we get in the hour.
Seriously? So, what, this
I
guy?
Think it will be because they play Thursday, so it's like everything is in fast
go
forward
time.
Around here. Yeah.
And wind's slowing down.
Yeah, there was no bounce on that ball. It didn't go far. It only went 5 yards. The ball's got to at least go 10 to give you a shot, but I like the idea. I think you absolutely needed to give yourself a shot at a turnover that your defense basically wasn't giving you. The closest you came to a turnover all day was big fella Jaron Reed trying to make a diving catch on the sideline, which is maybe not something that you can reasonably expect of him.
Yeah, I think actually the whole special teams phase. I you know, you heard from Clayton an hour ago. He didn't like that call. I did. I'm right there lockstep with you. I like that call. You, for your defense and for your group in that game
the
to win.
The only thing I didn't like from the special teams was Lockett taking the ball out of the end zone near the end. You haven't been, I mean, every time you've been letting the fly, letting it go, yeah. And you've been taking it at the 25, you decide to take it out at the end, and of course you get stopped at the 20, and there's a penalty.
Yes, on the 90-yard drive, yes. Yep.
It could have been a 75-yard drive, would have taken up less time.
Well, I'll tell you, I love the decision to punt at the end, too, with three timeouts. To kick deep and not onside kick in that moment. I love that decision. I love the effort level of the coverage teams. How Shaquem Griffin and his buddy did not knock each other out, I still don't know. That was
had a couple of
King
hits.
King, that was unbelievable. Do you know that Michael Dixon is averaging nearly now net 48 yards, net 47.7. He had a 68-yard
like
bomb yesterday. I mean, that guy, after an early season trying
to
find
his footing. It's not just 68 yards. It was 68 yards with the hang time enough that there was a guy right there when the dude caught it.
Crazy.
That's incredible.
Yes. So the special teams phase and Mr. Fossil and company that have dominated that phase against you for years, by no means dominated it. And, in fact, I think it was a push even. And just the effort level and the kicking and the punting, yeah, that was a positive.
Takeaways.
I'm going to have a decision to make here on KJ Wright because I feel really bad for him, man. KJ is one of the absolute gentlemen in this building. If you were to ask me at the gas station, hey, who do you think has and just exudes the most amount of grace and class at that Seahawk facility over the last decade or so? I don't think I would hesitate. I think it's KJ Wright. I mean, a selfless guy. He has been always about the team. He's done what is ever has been asked of him to do. And right now, he is just hobbled. Right now, he just, on the field, is trying to gut through this knee injury that he obviously had a setback earlier this year. And you just watch him and just the lack of twitch and explosion and getting underneath routes and impacting the game. He had, one solo tackle yesterday. You know, that second line of defense against a Rams group where you got to stop the run, you got to get underneath the in cuts, you know, was struggling to do so again, much like they did in the first match, much like everybody does, and trying to gut through this injury. Michael Kendricks were here and were available to play. I think you'd see a lot more split reps and more opportunities because, unfortunately, that knee and those legs just are not right.
Wow.
Takeaways.
Third and 15. Third and 15 again. Second week in a row, they've had third and 15. I know there are people out there who want to kill Russ for the turnovers in the last two games. That's totally fair. You can kill him for that. But I think I can argue that the two big plays on third and 15 may have contributed just as much to each of those losses. Both of them led to touchdowns. Both of them should have been stops and get the ball back. In one case, with very good field position. In the other case, you just would have gotten the ball back. And it's just brutal.
Yep. Clark in a stand-up position, double team. Goff steps up, fires a rocket right down the middle with a first down, and then some is Robert Woods.
Third and 15 should be very much to your advantage. You should be able to get enough of a pass rush there because they've got to get deep down the field. You have, in both cases, this case, you dropped eight. You dropped eight, and that guy is, he's not just open. There isn't a player within 10 yards of him.
No.
I watched it like five times. I am no expert. It looks to me like Justin Coleman jumps out of position on that play. Maybe I'm wrong. I honestly can't pretend like I have any idea what I'm looking for on that. But 2 weeks in a row, you've been beaten for a big play on third and 15. Both times it led to a touchdown.
Yep.
And both of them are killers for this
just
game.
They're turnovers. They're equivalent of an offensive turnover in that situation.
This was right after the Lockett
touchdown.
Gets a third
and 15 around this league. Third and 15 plus can't be on average more than 6%. Out of 100 times, a group in this league should not convert more than 6 or 7%, I would think. That's usually, you know, I don't know, the in 2018 when this game's gotten a little silly offensively, but through the years, that is much less than 10% of the time. And two killers, 55-yarder and that a 40-yarder. Not just like at the sticks, they run an in-cut, oh my gosh, what a great catch and double coverage. No, an in-and-go on Shaquille last week that is wide, wide open, and this one, just an in-cut, that there is nobody. There is nobody even breathing on him.
Why?
Yeah, I got...
Why? What happened?
Yeah, it's like you, I can't sit and pinpoint on one guy.
Well, you can do better than I can, though.
I can, and I can tell you that their ability in zone coverage to have an understanding where zone turns into man and conceptually what I've got to do to defend this play, just game management-wise on third and 15, totally out of whack, back-to-back weeks. Not
it's
good
funny enough. That's been an issue for this team for a long time. I remember that Dallas loss at home a few years ago where they threw a big third and 15 or third and 20 play to their other receiver, not Dez Bryant, their other guy, who made a catch on the sticks.
Terrence Williams.
Thank you. I mean, like, it's odd that has been kind of a weird...
Yeah, but even that was a scramble, an unbelievable throw into a cereal box. These two throws the last 2 weeks, you could have thrown. As open as these guys were, well, maybe not the 55-yarder, but pretty darn close.
Nope, couldn't have thrown either one.
Yeah, and I will wonder, and I do question, when the time comes where you finally say, okay, Justin Coleman's a good man corner. Shaquille's a good man corner. Tedrick's got good speed. Bradley McDougal can come down and cover anybody man-to-man. Like, when do you say, hey, we got to cut this loose and bring some more pressure? Because against Phillip Rivers, they brought none. And against Goff yesterday, I would challenge Coach, and I will, because I think their percentages of getting home, of throwaways, of hits, of pressures, was much, much better in their pressure man looks yesterday than it was in any of their zone coverages.
Takeaways.
I'm not going to lie. I love it when O-line come to the defense of their quarterback. There's nothing I love more when I watch in college or in pro ball where, you know, Big Ben the other night, you know, slides, right? And David DeCastro crawls out of his skin. He's ready to tear the limbs off Greg Reed for hitting his quarterback when he went to slide and hit him in the head. Justin Britt yesterday, of all the noise that Aaron Donald talks, you know, and all the, you know, all the times that he's hit his quarterback, and on that play, I think Russell fortunate to not have intentional grounding. They gave him a lot of grace. I know Mike Davis was around. He was at about 2 o'clock. Russell threw it at noon. But they gave him a little grace.
And it certainly wasn't a fumble, though.
Oh, no chance. Oh, absolutely not a fumble. But Justin Britt doesn't know any of that. And when Aaron Donald is running down the sidelines and he's celebrating, yeah, he's a foot into the white. Sign me up for unloading on that dude. You know, and I know that may sound dirty and cheap and classless and everything else, but Justin Britt got a chance to hit Aaron Donald, and I think he knew in that moment, Aaron Donald's going to come after me. So this may be one of those that's just going to go 15 and 15 and offsetting penalties, and if I get a shot at that, I'm going to unload on that dude. And you know what? At the end of the game, when Aaron Donald put his helmet on and he went to find Justin Britt was not going to back down. He was not going to for a second back down. And and I wouldn't mind paying some money in a little UFC ring to watch those two go at it, because I think it'd be one heck of a battle.
He's real lucky that Donald went back after him. I mean, because otherwise you've killed your drive before it even starts at the end of the
game.
That
is true.
So, I mean, while I understand what you're saying, maybe that's not the best time for it. Also, you know who else is dirty is Ndamukong Suh. Yet another,
yes,
like, cheap late hit on Russ.
And so is Fowler.
He threw an elbow to his back.
Those guys are dirty.
They are, and that's why Justin Britt's going to have enough is enough. And if I'm going to be around a pile with this guy, as much as they put their forearm in his throat, as much as they elbow, as much as Fowler talks, and if I get a chance to hit him, I'm going to hit him. And, man, did he unload. When you go back and watch that, I'm going to be willing to bet the amount of force that Justin Britt hit him with was more than Chancellor hitting Demaryius Thomas. Because Aaron Donald's 300 pounds running, and he unloads on him, and he knocks him 7 yards sideways. It was awesome.
Takeaways.
I want to give some kudos to the Seahawks. The only reason they have a shot to even win that game at the end is that they had all three of their timeouts. They didn't blow any of them. Now, they didn't have any big explosive plays where they couldn't call timeout afterwards.
True.
But they had all three timeouts, just as they did last week against the Chargers. And guess what? When you have all three, you can kick the ball deep and try to stop them.
Yep.
This is not brain surgery. A lot of times in the second half, especially in the third quarter, you are better off, and I'll say this again and again, you are better off taking the 5-yard penalty that comes with delay of game than burning one of those timeouts in a close game, or especially one when you're behind a score or two.
Yep.
Because without it, you have no chance to get the ball back. That's it. You just have to sit and wait, or you know, maybe you call the timeout once and you get the ball back with 45 seconds left needing a touchdown. That's not good enough. It is a better play to take the penalty and save those three timeouts.
Yeah, and you're going to play this style and this philosophy, and you're going to run the ball. You got to have them at the end of the game.
So good job. Nice job, guys. Way to radio those plays in on
time.
Way
to go.
All right, Seahawks. Unfortunately, they didn't win. All right, those are our takeaways from a busy Seahawks game.
Hey, can I give you one more? Did you retweet Albert? Yeah, you did, right there. Albert Breer, as much as we've just talked for the last 90 minutes, and maybe some of you can get a chance in the 9 o'clock hour to
I'm going to open it up here right now.
This Albert Breer yesterday, and I think he sums it up better in about, I don't know, 20 words than we do in 90 minutes of talking. Albert Breer says, the Rams complete the sweep, but Seahawks are way further along in their retooling than I think anybody expected. So, yeah, and I think that's pretty true. Yeah, the Rams got you. And I think Mike Sando tweeted out yesterday, 6 touchdown passes, no interceptions, like 600 yards, nearly, no, not quite 600, nearly 500 yards rushing against the Rams, 6 touchdowns, no picks, and you lose both games.
Yeah.
Like, you did that to them offensively. You really hit them in the mouth and played your style, just unable in both of those minutes, in the final minutes, to finish it off.
All right, so what's going on with Russell? I think he was, once again, the question after the game. Is something different with Russell? Is he good enough? I have people in my timeline telling me that Russell is now a bad quarterback and they'd rather have Nathan Peterman, that they should just get rid of him. And I have others saying Russell didn't have anything to do with this loss, which I don't think is true either. So where are you guys at? 206-421-3776. We'll start to discuss this quarterback and the game and season he's had thus far next here on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
I love you guys. I really do.
Who?
All of you.
Me?
Nah, the audience.
Liz?
The 7 people listening, maybe on a holiday like today.
It's definitely
only
not us, Brock. You just breeze past that.
Only three or four. Yeah. No, I mean, you guys are fine.
Howdy, Liz. DJ filling in for Kyle, who's snowbound in Boulder, Colorado.
I love you guys in general, just not specifically at this moment, Lydia. This is my amusement at the college. You throw out a question about the Seahawks game yesterday, which you would think would inspire a lot of passion. One call. You throw out a question about Russell Wilson, full phone lines, and you guys are great. You guys shame on us for ever talking about anything other
than
quarterback.
That one is easy to have an opinion on.
I'm aware.
You can watch a quarterback. He's got the ball in his hands. Do I know the blocking schemes? No. Do I know coverage and dropping eight? No. Can I gauge the effort level even at times of defensive linemen? No. Can I judge a quarterback? Absolutely.
Of course.
1,000%.
It's amazing.
Yes.
And how did you judge Russell yesterday?
I would say pretty similar to this season's grade for me. A B. He's a B. And even at a 130 QB rating or whatever, he ended up with three touchdown passes and 90-some yards rushing. Just for his standard, for what this team needs, he's got to be an A against quality opponents for them to win. Got to avoid a sack fumble. You know, got to hit David Moore, or got to find a way to throw an incredible throw to Tyler Lockett there at the end of the game. That he, kind of like this team, has very little margin. He's sitting at number six in this league right now, Salk. He's got a QB rating of 110. He's thrown 21 touchdowns to 5 picks. I mean, this is the best that he's largely been in any year of his career, save for the final 8 games, 2015. But it's not enough.
It's so funny. He in some ways played as good a game yesterday as you would want him to. And so I want to give him an A. He ran the ball finally. I thought he was accurate. His decision making was great. Like, all the things that make Russell himself were there yesterday. But part of the quarterback's job is to win late. Part of your job is to drive the team down and score when you have to. It's funny because he got them into field goal range, which is generally all you need to ask that quarterback to do. But unfortunately for him, the last two games, needed to score a touchdown. And
you know what? I'm going to say B+ because of that. 90 yards rushing against that group, that he became their screen game, that he became their short passing game based on the way they were rushing and covering. And he had 90 yards rushing and 3 touchdown passes.
I can't do that.
Okay.
I could give him a B+ or even an A- for the first, 58.5 minutes, but you got to score at the end. That's the gig.
So is it C+ again?
Maybe.
All right.
It might be, or B-.
You're a tough grader,
it's probably
a
B-, because he did so many good things throughout the game. But between the sack fumble, which you couldn't have, unfortunately, in that day, and I don't really know whether it's his fault or not, but you can't have it. And then not scoring at the end, it's probably a B- or C+, somewhere in that range. 206-421-3776. Derek is in Kent. Good morning, Derek.
Just to me, it seems like there's like some moral victories going on here. It's like, who cares what Tweezy did? Who cares how many rushing yards they get? They're like one or two games away from missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that matter at all?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, it does.
No, it does, but it doesn't. I mean, look, Derek, we heard from Pete Carroll himself. This is a year that they're transitioning. I mean, I want them to make the playoffs, and I think they've got a shot to do so. But does it matter as much as it did the last few years? Honest answer, no, not to me.
Well, that's cool. It just seems like when at the start of the year, you guys remember somebody saying they're going to go 4-10 or 6-10, whatever, and everyone was laughing and talking about how stupid that was. They can still go, but now it seems like it's. Like I said, one or two games away, they're going to miss the playoffs.
Well,
they might miss the playoffs at 8-8 or 9-7, but you think they're going to go four? You think they're going to lose out? You think they're going to lose their next 9 games, next 7 games, rather, including 2 to San Francisco, 1 to Arizona?
No, heck no.
I mean, look, this team is a lot better than people thought, and if it is a transition and they are getting better, you know, closer to where they want to be next year, you're right. I'm tired of moral victories also, and I want them to actually find a way to win these games, but I just can't kill them for it at the same time.
Can you, Derek?
What I can say is, that retooling, that rebuild, and all that wordplay that they're doing, it doesn't matter. At the end of the game, all that matters is the wins and losses.
That's can you finish? No, you're right, Derek.
I appreciate
that.
Derek, I love that.
Yep.
Good for you, man. I love that. Good.
Yep.
Great call. I appreciate the phone call.
Are they better than we thought they would be this year? Yes. Is Albert Breer right? Is this retooling happening faster? Yes. Is this rookie class pretty darn awesome? When actually the first rounder gets going and Rashad Penny and your fifth round punter is awesome and Trey Flowers is starting and holding his own. And yeah, all that is really good. But to Derek's point, okay, now you're there.
Yeah.
We got one possession games. I mean, this is who you are. Who you are finishers. I mean, that's the one thing that Russ and Pete and crew has been, man. You have been able to finish these close games. And at 1-5 right now, I know the mood of the coach here in 55 minutes when he sits down.
He's fired up.
He's going to be fired up, yet he's also going to say, how do we finish against Green Bay Thursday that more than likely is going to be determined in the final 5 minutes? How do we finish in Carolina more than likely going to be determined?
Because if you don't do it, that guy will. Aaron Rodgers will find a way to get that done. 206-421-3776. Go to line 6. Talk to Oscar's in Seattle. Hi, Oscar. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, so real quick on my intake with Russell, I agree with Salk in giving him about a B minus. One of the things that I think is him, his poise, his accuracy. I feel like he's, in my observation in these past couple of games, is either being a little bit more timid or just his accuracy is not there. And, you know, that last throw that he threw to Lockett, you know, had Lockett been accurate, you know, that would have been caught. You know, we could have had a chance to win that game. Oof, yeah. The past couple of games, you know, comes down to that fourth quarter. And I don't know, I just feel a little bit nervous now in these last couple minute games with him and, like, are we going to win or not? So, you know, it comes down to, you know, those final minutes, that fourth quarter. And
yeah.
I don't know if I've been really trusting him right now. And,
yeah.
And if, you know, us.
Well,
you know,
got to get over the hump. Yeah, you got to get over the hump, Oscar. Thanks for the phone call to be trustworthy. I'll say this.
Accuracy's been a problem.
Well, the one little low one to David Moore, actually.
Yeah, was the one last week as well to, where those to, are just, Jaren, to they, Jerron Brown.
Yeah, they just
first Jerron Brown, by the way.
They
he played
a little
game?
In between. I think he was active, yeah.
Okay.
I will say this, though, on that last drive.
There's some guys in this team that are active that you just never see.
Russell's throw to Tyler. His chunk throw where he stepped up in the pocket and whistled that sucker across the field and Tyler hit it on the run and kind of stopped and cut back and then to scramble for 12 yards, like back-to-back plays to gain 40 yards against that group. And I love they panned over to Jared Goff and he's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Here's the guy that's second only to Matthew Stafford in the last 5 years at finding ways to win in the fourth quarter. And as Russell said post-game, they could feel the nervousness in that stadium. Everybody getting a little nervous that the ball is in his hands with an opportunity to win.
He put them in position with a couple of really nice plays. And look, I think he's got to get it done.
About those.
I think you got to complete one of those four balls, unfortunately, on the final possession. But I don't think he was inaccurate on the throw to Lockett. I mean, he's running with Aaron Donald coming at him, and he's trying to loft it over a defender in between them. I mean, that is he needs to have like a Sherman Douglas floater.
Yeah.
Remember Sherm? Sherman Douglas? Little floater?
Little penny drop.
Little floater in the lane. All right, 206-421-3776. Cameron, line 5 in Seattle. Hi, Cameron.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, I really think that Russell Wilson has had a pretty tremendous season, and I really think the two Rams games and the game last week have really been emblematic of that they really need to look at the system that they put in place on the offense and how they've built the team. And until they do that, until they are more open-minded and wanting to look at the advanced analytics and understand that maybe being a run-first team isn't beneficial for winning games. And I just think it's not a coincidence that 5 years ago, that style that they have won really close games, but 5 years now in today's NFL, it's not. It puts a lot of pressure on every single play. You're asking Russell to be basically perfect to win the game, and you're expecting a lot out of a defense that's really been hindered by new rule changes and also by offenses and quarterbacks that are playing at a higher level.
Well, the one thing I would disagree completely with there, Cameron, thank you for the phone call, is I would totally disagree with what it's doing to your defense. This is the only reason you're in these games. That in this stretch against these quarterbacks, if you played conventional football and it was 14 possessions and it was quicker three and outs because you just threw it, you know, and you threw it a little bit more and you put the onus on this defense right now, no thank you. Absolutely no thank you. Mm-hmm. This is a group that's thin on the D-line, that's an injury away at the second level from just being even further decimated. And, you know, in the secondary is young and inexperienced and is growing, but is still having massive chasms of zone coverage busts and everything else. So I would disagree with that. This style, to me, is one in a retool you have to play. You have to play. You have to have a great punter that's leading this league in net punting. You have to run it, and run it even more than any of the analytics are going to tell you, to try to complete the circle and protect a defense that's given up 7.5 yards a play the last 2 weeks to elite quarterbacks. And will, if you're going to just play it totally conventionally offensively.
All right, coming up next, Brock, before we talk to Coach Carroll at 9:30 this morning, we'll try to get back to your calls here in just a little bit. Joe Mauer retires. A whole bunch of good teams lose, and the Seahawks and Rams can seemingly agree on one thing. I just don't think it's a good thing. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, Pete Carroll, about 45 minutes away, the Pete Carroll Show. He was fired up after yesterday's game, mad and excited all at once. It was a weird combo, so see what kind of mood Pete's in and get a sense as to what happened yesterday. We'll do that in 45 minutes. Right now, what's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Washington State Cougars dominated the Colorado Buffaloes, while the Huskies moved up to 17th.
Yeah, I think that's good news. I will be disappointed if Washington State does not move up to number 7 in the committee rankings tomorrow. I said to you last week, I thought they would after that Alabama-LSU game, but you start to study it more, and there is such a love fest for the SEC and what they've done, and they kept LSU there. LSU is not as complete a team as Washington State. They're just not, and they go to Arkansas, and they play a terrible game. I think it's a one-possession game against a bad Arkansas team, and Wazoo controls that thing from beginning to end. They play complimentary football. You dig into the numbers, they're one of the few top 25 teams in total offense and defense. They've got a Heisman contender at quarterback. They believe in what they're doing. They should be the number 7 team in America in the rankings tomorrow.
Yeah, it's good news, obviously, for the Cougs. They do a great job, but really, I don't think they've got a shot to get into the top 4. I don't know that enough mayhem can occur ahead of them and to have the committee truly respect their wins enough to actually put them into the top 4, which means they are now in a position where all they got to do is beat the Huskies and then win the Pac-12 championship, and they're in the Rose Bowl. And it doesn't matter what they do this week, at least from a record standpoint, that's all they have left to do. It's pretty impressive at this point in the season.
Good news, bad news, no news.
You can tell where I stand on this news. Floyd Money Mayweather got 2 footballs handed to him in the game yesterday by Tyler Lockett and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, it was really weak. Was it Cooks or Woods? I thought it was Woods. Cooks. I guess it was Cooks. He's all right, good. Sorry about that. What's the difference? Yeah, this bothers me. I'm not going to lie. Floyd Mayweather as a human being bothers me. He's a professional boxer, a guy who makes a living with his fists, which I don't have a problem with. But what I do is that once those fists become a deadly weapon, using them to hit women seems like a bit of a problem. In fact, it seems like an enormous problem, and yet he continues to be glorified. And that, yeah, it bothers me. I don't now dislike Tyler Lockett. I don't have a problem necessarily with Brandon Cooks, but it does bum me out to see the glorification of a guy who's a bad guy. He's a bad guy. And yes, that really does upset me. And in moments like that, I can't help it. I want to turn to something that is more positive. So I tweeted out yesterday the address for LifeWire. If you want to make a donation to LifeWire.org or your favorite domestic violence charity, every glorification of Floyd Mayweather seems like a good chance to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. It was bad news. And it was also bad news because it cost us the opportunity to see another celebration.
Yeah.
The Seahawks receivers have been as good as anybody in all the NFL and all the world at their touchdown celebrations. And instead of handing the ball to that guy, yeah, we missed out on that opportunity. That's bad news.
Which Tyler even said after that they had something
they
planned
did.
Out that
they
he
did.
Went rogue and people yep. were upset with him.
Can't do it, man. Can't do it. Can't win with him.
Good news, bad news, no them. News.
The Panthers, Eagles, and Falcons all lost in Week 10 to help keep the Seahawks playoffs hopes alive, despite their loss to the Rams.
Oh, good job, Deej. That's DJ filling in for Kyle, snowbound in Boulder, Colorado.
Here we go, DJ.
Yeah. That's good news. Yeah, the Browns beat the Falcons. That was a surprise. The Panthers got blown out in Pittsburgh. And the Cowboys beat the Eagles, sitting 4-5. The Seahawks right now, number 9 in the playoff chase. They win Thursday night. They'll be number 7. And looking ahead of, right in front of them is Minnesota and Carolina, 2 teams they'll play in the final 6 games.
Seahawks look better than those teams. I know they lost, but they look better than the Falcons losing to the Browns. They look better than the Eagles did last night on Monday Night Football. And they've looked better than the Panthers at times this year, who have at least one win that they sneaked out that they probably didn't deserve. So, yeah,
It's a real shame that those first two games went the way they did, because otherwise you would be right in the thick of this thing, really controlling your own destiny. As it is now, you've got to beat the Packers, you've got to beat the Panthers, you've got to beat the Vikings, and you need things in the NFC North and the NFC South to go your way.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Husky men's basketball team got blown out by 22 against Auburn, and then their bus caught on fire when they left.
Yeah, bad news and bad news. Just not competitive in that game with Auburn at all. All the way across the country, maybe a little wake-up call, a little reminder for Hop and his staff to these guys that, yeah, you've arrived in the top 25, but that's not nearly good enough. Yeah, and then I was chatting yesterday to some folks that had a little more detail on that bus fire, and it was awful. I mean, just terrible. And thankfully, the bus driver and a number of those players and coaches could smell what was going on and were able to pull over and get out of that vehicle. Nobody got hurt. But another couple-hour delay, barely made the charter flight back home. And then we'll have to rally and play a home game really late against San Diego tonight.
Yeah, by the way, Auburn's good. Top 10 team now with the rankings coming out, I believe. They're a really good basketball team. To go across the country and try to beat them, I think, was a stiff challenge for this Husky group.
It's just
point.
Not competitive. Just want to be more competitive.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what? That college basketball is weird, where on any given day I think there isn't any given team can beat anybody. So let's see what they do here over the course of the next few weeks. I'm not going to panic over one loss. No news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The legendary Joe Mauer is retiring.
All right, this is generally no news for most of us. Joe Mauer hasn't been relevant for the last couple of years, but I saw some question about whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. And I don't know the answer to it necessarily statistically, but I just wanted to relay a story that I've probably told on the show before, but it just amazed me. It was in the Mariners clubhouse a couple of years ago.
You've told five times?
At least once or twice.
It's okay.
But it's been a while. It's a great story.
It's a good story.
It just blew me away. And they had a Detroit Minnesota game up on the TV in there, and Mauer is facing Justin Verlander. He takes a 95-mile-an-hour fastball and hits a double that he pulls down the line. And it's just a normal play. Like, you don't think anything of it. And three guys, I'm trying to remember, it was David Artsman, Rob Johnson, somebody else, they jump up like, oh my God! I was like, what? Did you see that? It's like, yeah, he hit a double down the line. Like, no, he didn't. Look, watch this. And, like, showing the replay, and it's like, it's a high inside fastball, and he's able to pull his hands in and pull it down the line. They're like, you can't keep that fair. It's impossible. It's impossible to keep that ball fair, and yet his bat speed is so quick that he brought his hands in and around and kept that ball fair. He's the best hitter in baseball. I was like, oh, my God. Like, just the way they see the game is obviously so different. And I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer or not, but based on what those guys said, he was the best in his position for a period of time. He probably deserves it.
You don't think Joe Mauer's a Hall of Famer?
Only catcher with three batting titles.
That's right.
Ever.
He's absolutely a Hall of Famer. As hard as that position is to play and then to transition and be very competent first baseman, I think he's absolute Hall of Famer.
It's hard to think of players in your time as being Hall of Famers. Like, yeah, he was good. I don't know.
Yeah. But then when you watch it's the same way you can't think of movies or soundtracks as the best ever until you've had some time.
Yeah, that may be true. Yeah, and maybe we need that time and space after Mauer to kind of think of it that way. But just seeing those guys and hearing their description and reaction has always blown me away. So
he needed
a Hall of Famer.
We needed some time and space for Howdy and Lydia to put together montages. I mean, they both put together. We asked for it in the 7 a.m. hour.
It's like our show starts at 9 o'clock. It's perfect. It'll do so next. I'm Brock and Salk.